Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be rebroadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by searching iTunes for Radio Le Mans or visiting radiolemans.com.
The WeatherTech Sports Car Championship on IMSA Radio.
Let's head straight to our CrowdStrike pit lane and Shay Adam. Good afternoon, Shay.
Good afternoon, John, and good afternoon to Ryan Hardwick, who actually is going to be getting to drive a race car in this practice session. Ryan, your warhorse, the number 55 Proton Mustang, it went to start the session and then didn't. What happened with it?
Yeah, we just had a little bit of bad luck with a part failure in our clutch, and the car just failed to engage first gear, and it was a simple fix. Just had to replace one part there in the clutch line, but it was unfortunate because it took a lot of time away from us, but we were able to get in at the end of the session. Corey turned some laps. We learned a little bit about the car, but definitely need to make up for it and learn as much as we can here the second session.
You've won Sebring before in a blue first form car. What's it like having those colors on such an iconic livery?
Yeah, it was a blue first form car, but it was quite different car. this car, the Mustang is, I'm still learning it, but I will say the car is really, really impressive. And for an amateur driver, for a bronze driver, I'll say it's probably one of the easiest cars I've ever driven. It's, in fact, the more you push, the more you try, sometimes you slow down, or at least I do. And it's like when you just relax in the Mustang, the lap time comes, right? And so it's a real joy to drive. It's quite different from the last car I drove, where the Porsche, you have to push really hard, And so I'm just excited to be part of this, Ford Multimatic program, and both here in IMSA and in the WEC. And, it's a real blessing.
The good news is that you guys have a few extra sets of tires now by dint of not running that first practice session, so maybe sticker tires for you later on in your run.
I like you, Shay. It's always glasses half full, no matter what the situation is. There's always a bright spot.
Good luck, Ryan. Yeah,
thank you.
It's a lovely day. It's very, very warm, but hiding most of the drivers, including Ben Hanley, out of the United Auto Sports car. Ben, I saw you put some effort into the first session. How much have you learned over the first hour and a half here?
It's more about feeling out what cyber condition the track's in. We came here testing, but it was quite cool, so very different. So just getting a feel out for what the track's going to be, and it's going to change quite a lot between now and the end of the race. So, yeah.
Give us mere mortals an idea. The track's the same. The corners are in the same place. The concrete's the same, but it's 15 degrees hotter or so. What does that effect actually have to you as a driver in the car?
It has quite a big effect, The first effect is obviously with the warm, the temperatures, the air is less dense, so we have less downforce on the car effectively. Hang on a minute.
Showing off, isn't he?
Yeah, so the downforce is a big factor, and then obviously we have less downforce, the track temperature is hotter, so the tyres are hotter, so they have less grip. So overall, it can be a chunk less grip than with a cooler track and cooler ambient temperatures. And then you can also have a bit of a balance shift as well, front to rear. So we're just feeling it out in the first session. You can't really chase too much in the first session because the track's a bit green and stuff. So you put it down, you make sure you're in a happy window, you do your laps. And then, towards the end of this session and the night session is the most important, certainly, for finishing the race.
We've got a 12-hour race that's going to go from 17 degrees to 30, which is air temperature, not track temperature, 31, back down again. But do you have any tools actually in the car to as you say, as a balance shift you can work with, or you just have to live with it going from slightly understeery to slightly oversteering?
We don't have many, not so much in the P2. No, you've got your feet and the brake bias adjuster, so it's about as much as we can do in the P2 car. So, yeah, you kind of got to predict what it's going to be like on at the end of the race, because, tonight's going to be the best reference for that. But that doesn't take into account the 11 hours of running. And putting the rubber down from all the new tyres that's going to go out there in the race. So you're a little bit guessing. Obviously, experience comes into play there with the team, with the drivers and stuff. So, yeah, we're in a happy window at the moment. Hopefully we can keep it there, do some tweaking and just go a bit quicker.
Race look good up, Ben.
Thank you very much.
Well, Shea was very happy with most of the cars, but I have got two penalties. One of them for leaving the pit box early, so Shea will be wagging a finger in the direction of Dragon Speed, Oricker and Malte Jakobsen, the number 81. He's going to get a drive through. They are the first pit box at the pit out. So that one is a bit of an oddity, as the other penalty is a little more significant, although it's an inconvenience as the recent Ferrari's gone off the circuit at pit out. This is the number 62 bright red car. Come back to that other penalty in a moment, as Davide Rigon is in the runoff of turn one. He's cycling through everything. I can see that by the fact that the lights are going on and off. This will be a red flag unless he gets it going. Fires up the 2.9 engine, and he's weaving left and right here as if there's not something, if there's something wrong with the steering. He's pointed it back towards the track very quickly. The 023 Ferrari is the other car that has had a penalty, and that will be a 5-minute hold for a late delivery of their data stick. That's Triazi Competizione, and so they will be parked for 5 minutes at the start of this session.
Yeah, at the end of every session you have a certain prescribed amount of time to take the data stick with all the information that was accumulated on the data system on that car during the session to the IMSA technical team, and if you don't do so, that's the result. A 5-minute hold.
Hazard flashes on from Davide Rigon in the 62. Great if you're on the highway, but he's in harm's way there at the exit of turn one. Race control talking to the team to see if they can give them some information about whether he's going to need recovery. I can't imagine they'll leave that car there very much longer with that very fast run. In fact, there we are, the red flags just come out. You could almost
fire it up. Yep.
Of course, the minute the red flag came out, the car fired. Literally the nanosecond that he fired, that the red came out, it fired up. So this will be a very quick red flag indeed. They just went through all of the, clearly went through all of the reset on that car. And Davide Rigon, very experienced. Let's go down to Nick Damon. The first session earlier on today, Nick, we had the full bingo card for Iron Lynx, Iron Dames. Every one of their cars had a penalty. Six drive-throughs, plus a spin, plus an off-course excursion, plus a car that needed to be reset. How's things going down in the Iron Dames part of the pit lane now on this CrowdStrike pit lane report?
I have to say it's not the greatest start. In the words, I'm sorry, I haven't a clue, they were late arriving for the Sebring practice ball.
Ah.
And so they got to the edge. They realised they were too late with the mechanics. They're parked, obviously, at the way we blend in, which actually is just after the part where the cars begin through the pit lane. The problem was, of course, there were three burly mechanics who were pushing the car, and that's not allowed once the session started. So one burly mechanic had to run all the way up to the Iron Lynx tent, which is over halfway, and get a driver, which was Michelle Gatti, in full livery, hat and seat inserts. Then she had to then run down with both of them and get in the car so they can actually enter the hot pit lane. So it's been quite obviously they missed it by a few minutes, and then they've kind of forgot to have a driver waiting at the bottom of the pit lane.
It's not been a banner day, I think it's fair to say, for the Iron Lynx teams and cars. Cars lined up in the fast lane, ready to go, headed by the number 20, MDK by High Class Racing, Lawrence Hurt behind the wheel of the red, white and black number 20. I think behind that it's United and the Wins car, that's the number 2 machine of the Ben Keating, I'm sure, who's in that car at the moment, just waiting for everybody to come back into the pits. We still haven't had the Dragon Speed car serve its penalty for leaving its pit box early. It will have to do that when we go back to green. I suppose this is relatively good news for the five-minute stop and hold, or do they not hold the red flag in that? That's a question that I'm not sure of. I'd have to go and look that up.
Yeah, good question. I think the red flag situation doesn't count toward the 5 minutes, right. But I might be wrong.
Okay. Five-minute stop and hold, five-minute green stop and hold. And we're back to green now at an hour into 23 to go. Actually, 22 and 52, 51, 50 as the cars go back out onto the circuit. Now, a few cars we didn't see this morning, including Paul Miller Racing's BMW. That car has been onto the pit lane. There was also problems that seemed to have been addressed for the number 55. That was the Proton Competition Ford Mustang. Corey Lewis did get a few laps at the end.
Yeah, that was a clutch issue that we heard about.
Clutch, yeah, that's right.
We don't know.
Jimmy Bruni's car failed to fire off the hybrid. That was the 963 Porsche from Proton. But that car has made its way back into the pit lane. So we'll watch that one for going out as well. No split sessions this weekend, as far as I'm aware. So those sessions where it's an hour and a half and everybody gets an hour, I think it's full all skate for everybody through both of the sessions and into the darkness session tonight.
Yeah, I think so. So the thinking behind it normally is to give the bronze drivers in particular an opportunity to get out there on track without any encumbrances from the pro traffic, but I don't think that's going to happen. It's just not on my schedule, so it's kind of interesting really. I mean the whole level of intensity just ramps up through the whole weekend, doesn't it? I mean, the first session this morning was certainly the least critical session, I think, for the preparation for the race. This afternoon more important because, you know, this is going to be the meat of the race, if you'd like. And then tonight, in the probably cooler conditions, that's when it gives the teams a good idea of how the car should be handling the following day when we're getting towards the end crunch time in the race. And then, of course, tomorrow it's just about qualifying. So most of the drivers will have a day off tomorrow, at least in terms of from driving the car. And then there'll be all systems go on Saturday.
Saturday race, of course, 9:40 Central. 9:40 Central? No, not 9:40 Central. No, 9:40 Eastern. But it is daylight savings time now here in the States, so make sure you get your calculations correct. US changed its clocks last weekend, which meant Jeremy had an hour less in bed.
That's a problem, that was.
On Saturday night and Sunday morning. Had to come in from his nightclub a bit earlier. Wasn't happy. Get up ridiculously early for St. Pete.
Race at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. Which is net 7.
That's the point.
And, you know, for Jeremy, normally there's only one 7 o'clock in the day, and that's in the evening when he's sitting down to a nice G&T. Probably just coming in by then, Jeremy, were you?
Yes.
Strip.
Straight in the old days, maybe.
Yeah, straight from the nightclub, straight to the track. Yeah. We've done that.
There must be once upon a time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Unfortunately, those days are long gone.
Long ago. Way down the road. Yeah. We have got the Madison Snow-driven Paul Miller Racing machine out on the circuit. Good to see that car out there. It's going through turn one at the moment. Add to the number 81's penalty for leaving the pit box early. The number 43 as well.
Andretti
Aston. And what's the other one there, Jeremy? 32. Andretti Porsche, excuse me. And the other one is the 32, which is Mick Grenier in the Mercedes-AMG GT3.
Caught off Preston Motorsports Mercedes. There's a pit lane speed violation also for car number 43.
Oh, hello. Going for the full house. Down at turn 7 a moment. Oops. Or two. Just a little bit of a run on.
Number 11 TDS LMP2 car.
Can't miss that one with the bright highlight, the yellow on it. Just ran through onto what is, let's not forget, the old circuit that ran all the way down there. Yeah. Where if you got your braking wrong, you ended up on the highway. There's a set of crash gates there. And there is a very famous piece of footage from a Trans Am race of a driver missing his braking point and going out through that gate, turning left, coming back in through the main gate, driving back in to the circuit. Shea Adam was at that event. Go and look it up on your favourite video site. New set of Michelin tyres for the Iron Dames as it just clouds over a little bit.
Yeah.
And let's see what that does. The air temperature has gone up to 31 Celsius, which is 88 Fahrenheit, 49% in humidity. Let's watch that track temperature, 26 at the moment. See if that starts to drop. GTPs are out in this session. Colton Herter is the quickest for Wayne Taylor Racing. And they're Acura. In fact, no, he's not, because his teammate Ricky Taylor's gone through. The 150.192.
148.2 was the fastest this morning. But still somewhere away from what we can expect tomorrow in qualifying, that's for sure. Another couple of seconds, I think, to be found from that.
Just a couple of stories that we wanted to pick up on from the end of the last session. We've covered off the clutch issue for the 55 and Jimmy Bruni's engine, internal combustion engine problem for the Proton. Shea Adam has news of the Pfaff McLaren with it had Ollie in it, didn't it? Oh, off for the number six. That is the Fred McAvecky driven Porsche Penske Motorsport car at turn 10. It's the, if you will, the Salzburg coloured car with the white pinstripes. Just waiting for a gap in traffic. Just missed his braking point there. Yeah, it was Ollie behind the wheel, wasn't it, when the car came to a stop towards the end of that session?
It was, and I know we have a lot of fans following Pfaff Motorsport around the track and around the world. Hi, Jen Klein. It was a issue with that stuff in the tank that makes the car actually go and not having it, which you might remember, they ran out of fuel at the beginning of practice number one for Daytona as well. So Pfaff Motorsport being consistent, using the practice to make sure that they know how far they can run on their tanks, and just a really good spot by the Iron Dames mechanics. They just put four new sticker tires on the car. No driver change, so you'll have to let me know who was behind the wheel, John, because I couldn't tell which helmet it was. The windshield is actually a little bit tinted, it almost looks like. But they put the right front tire on the left front and the left front tire on the right front, and a mechanic noticed when they dropped the car off the air tracks. So it's Michelle Gatting who's taking the car out, the Danish driver. So hello to Jules Gounon, who I'm sure is listening in to see how she's doing.
Adam, part of our crowd strike pit lane for the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship this weekend. And that was just a straight lose by Macko there. I thought he'd just run on and gone in too quickly, but he actually lost the back end. I mean, he had gone in too fast for the lateral grip available, but I thought he'd just missed his braking point and bailed out the corner. In fact, he had a more than a half spin, Jeremy, before he went onto the grass there and drivers left at turn 10.
Yeah, just tried to, it's kind of as if the rear brakes had locked up, perhaps the car got completely sideways, missed the apex of the corner and off onto the grass. Never actually turned it around, I don't think, but did everything but didn't hit anything, gets the car back on track again and off he goes. Put it up to a representative lap time though for number 6 Porsche.
Down here in the well, the ever warmer and more humid pit lane with Daniel. So this is quite muggy now, isn't it? How is that going to affect the cars?
Well, I think will be for everyone the same, but yeah, it's quite humid, quite hot. But I think it didn't change so much actually. We will need to test some test points in the car, and we'll see how it will react on the setup and on the performance of the cars.
Big change in the balance of performance since Daytona. I mean, in some ways slightly controversial. How do you see that?
Yeah, we were penalized quite strongly here, but it's like it is. We need to extract the maximum that we have in the cars. For sure, we are working also in our to optimize what we have, and this will be the key of the race. For sure, it's not optimal, but it's like it is.
Is it possible that here at Sebring you can handle a poor balance of performance better than you can at Daytona? Because it seems that a bad balance in Daytona is certain death of the car's chances. But here, can you kind of drive it, talent it out of it?
Well, we all know that the Sebring 12 hours is a very unique race. A lot of stuff can happen during the races, and until the last 30 minutes of the race, you never know what happened. We could see last year that it was very intense at the end of the race. So we will need to survive the first hours as always, and then we will see. But as I said, we will try to extract the maximum of our car and to keep it in one piece until the end.
Thanks, good luck.
Thank you.
Daniel Serra down in the pit lane with Nick Damon in that CrowdStrike pit report. Tymon van der Helm to the top for JDC Miller Motorsports. That's a nice thing to see for John Church with a 1:50.179 time, and a very quick young driver. Not sure whether it was him who put the time in, actually. He's just taken the car out. It was, right, okay. Jeremy puts the thumb up.
Last lap 5 out of 6, I think. Yep.
So
it was Tymon. But still only in the 50s. We're down to the 48s this morning.
Will we get that quick in this warmer afternoon weather, do we think?
I would think so, yes.
Just improving.
Fastest lap last year for GTP was actually 48.3. But I would expect to be going quicker than that this time around. Pole last year was a 45.8 for Pipo Durrani.
Right. Qualifying the only session for the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship tomorrow. And comes up just over lunchtime. So set your diaries for that. Go to radiolemon.com, scroll down through schedule to give you the times. Great to see Colin Brown back in the championship after a somewhat uncertain time for him at the end of last season because of the situation with the Acura teams and Meyer Shank Racing in his IndyCar debut last weekend as well. So it's a good time for Colin at the moment. Let's catch up with him now on this CrowdStrike pit lane report and share Adam.
Colin, you did so well last weekend. All of your IMSA family was cheering you on, but how nice was it to climb back in the LMP2 earlier today?
Yeah, it was nice. I certainly appreciate all the fans and all the support from this side of the world, but yeah, it felt a bit more like what I was used to, a bit more natural. Certainly a lot to learn over on the IndyCar side, but you know, here I kind of started the car up, left, went out, and I was like, oh, yeah, right. I don't feel like I'm at a totally new school. Like, I know all these guys. These are all my friends. So, yeah, it was good. It was fun to get back here and get back to work.
The extra weekend driving in the Florida heat, do you think that that's going to help you when we get into the race time, particularly mid-afternoon?
Yeah, I think it will. You know, I think the more you can be race car fit, the better. You know, I think that was a big reason George and the guys wanted to do the Asia Le Mans series as well. It just kept us sharp in a car, you know. Can work out in the gym and do all that as much as you want, but there's no substitute for being in a race car, the G-forces, the stress, the decision making. So I think all of that will help us for sure tomorrow, or Saturday, I guess.
Well, tomorrow for qualifying too. That's definitely going to come into play for George. You and George have won this race together. Toby's never raced here before. How are you trying to educate young Mr. Sowery into the ways of the 12 hours of Sebring?
He's done a great job, you know, across Daytona and in Asia and here when we've tested. So not too much to have to teach him. But, you know, I think the biggest thing here, as the veteran guys know, the heat in the afternoon, not only physically, but for these cars, these Michelin tires, trying to make grip in the afternoon heat is always a struggle. And you feel like, my gosh, the car is so bad, I can't drive it. And then, you know, it starts to get cooler and you get another set of new tires and it starts to get a bit better. So I think it's about managing that kind of middle of the afternoon mentality to not wind yourself up too much and still be relaxed and know it's going to come back to us. But, you know, until you experience a double stint in 90-degree heat here in Sebring, there's not a whole lot you can do. You know, you just got to experience it and realize how bad it is.
George, last year with this team winning the Michelin Endurance Cup, second in the championship. Well, you guys, after the second place finish at Daytona, are second in points. Are you looking at points already?
I mean, I think for us, you know, we're looking at wins, right? I mean, we want to win races. I think, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, it's easy to talk about chasing points, but at the same time, if you want to win, you can't crash either to win, right? So I think I've always been out of this mindset of, like, you focus on the races until it gets to the last one or two, and then you start to see where it shakes out. But right now, we got to just knock off, you know, good results, good full push efforts, and try to see what we can do. You know, certainly, man, Daytona was tough. We were close. We needed a little bit more at the end, but, you know, really happy to get that under our belts. We had a good result, and, you know, I think Daytona's one that can either go your way and keep you in the championship or one that can really take you out just with luck. So happy luck was on our side and looking forward to getting going.
Good luck for the remainder of this event.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I told Colin, by the way, that he's got to come up to the booth to claim a present. And walking up the three flights of stairs, that might be the hardest thing he does all day.
I can show him where the elevator is. Yeah, our artist in residence, Neil Gardner, did a drawing, a pencil drawing of the Le Mans, Petit Le Mans winning car. And Colin decided he had to have it. And so we've facilitated that. I went up to Melton Mowbray last Friday and picked it up so that we could bring it over. And that is what is in that tube, Jeremy, to your left-hand side. Hand-drawn by Neil Gardner, our artist in residence. NG Auto Art, for those of you who don't know his work. With a bit of luck and a fair wind, Neil will tweet that in a second or two, because I'm absolutely certain he'll be listening in at the moment. At IMSA Radio, if you want to say hello to us wherever you are in the world, hello to Baron, to Sean Creech Motorsport, to Santiago Velo, and many others who are tweeting in to say hello, to Juan as well, who's trackside here. And it is a very, very lovely afternoon and a very, very busy infield that we're looking at from the IMSA Global Broadcast Centre across to the midway and beyond, and then through the trees. Cannot really see the track from under the Corvette Bridge down towards the hotel, which you can sometimes see that, but there's so many RVs and towing caravans there. In the very early part of the week last year and over what was then WEC Prologue weekend, I could follow the cars with my binoculars all the way down to the hairpin, then from the hairpin out the back of turn 8, 9 to 10, and then through the trees, lost them again, then got them a little bit down the back towards Jean de Bian. Not a chance of that now. Far too much in there. Traffic going backwards and forwards on that Corvette Bridge. What an addition that was, by the way, to have two-way traffic on that a few years ago. And fair play to John Story and the rest of the team here for the infrastructure upgrades that seem to come every year here at Sebring. 72 years of history for this race, but plenty, there's no looking backwards here. There's a celebration of the history, but pushing forwards all the time. And what looks to me to be another record crowd this weekend, if we haven't beaten the ridiculous amount of people here last year already, I'll be very surprised. There's barely, in fact, as I say that, there are four parking spots opposite me on the front straight for RVs, and one of them is being filled as I speak with a nice piece of reversing with a fifth wheel going in there. Absolutely incredible, and a very knowledgeable crowd as well. Everybody I've seen has wanted to say hello, have a chat. Thank you to all the fans who have done that. And it's at 100.9 FM if you are just arriving and listening on the PA. And of course, at the weekend, we'll take over Highlands ESPN on 1063 AM. Sport across the Central Highlands. And Sirius XM 206, as well as RS2 around the world. So coming down to an hour to go here, Jeremy.
Mm-hmm. We've got a couple of cars now in the 49s.
Yeah.
Quickest of all is Nick Yellerly, number 25 BMW M Hybrid V8. 149.371. Less than a couple of tenths behind him is the early spinner, Fred Makowiecki, in the number 6 Porsche Motorsports 963. And then next up is the time that was set a little earlier by Time and van der Helm in the JDC Miller Motorsports car number 85, the bright yellow Porsche 963.
Jimmy Bruni's just improved in his 963, the car that had problems this morning.
Good.
For Proton. He's now up to 8th.
Right. Still behind Maddie Campbell, also improved last time around, John.
Yeah, Porsche's not having it all its own way. The 6 of Fred Makowiecki is in second. The other works car of Matt Campbell is about a second and a half away from that. But time, and you don't know, that's the problem from our point of view, from this type of session, Jeremy. You don't know what work schedule these guys are going
Indeed.
Through, what run plans they have. So Matt might be doing long runs and mileage tests, fuel tests.
Yeah, I think Mako's been out since probably the start. He's completed 12
it.
Laps. So more,
yeah.
Oh, has he? Okay, yes. So he's done more laps than anybody else during this practice session.
And had a spin, including in that spin, of course, at 10. Yeah.
In LMP2, it's the AF Corsa car number 88 that's fastest. Nicholas Nielsen. The car's only completed 6 laps though in this session, 152.225 for the Dane. A fellow countryman, Malte Jakobsen, second fastest in the class in car number 81. That's a Dragon Speed Orica. And in third place, car number 18, the Era Motorsport car that had the problems this morning. Didn't get out at all, I think. Didn't turn a representative lap time. But Ryan DL has already done a few laps this afternoon.
Yeah, good point.
His third fastest in LMP2. Just ahead of George Kurtz, who set the time this afternoon in that 04 CrowdStrike Babe APR.
It's a great story, George Kurtz.
Yeah,
they've worked with Colin Brown for about
well.
A decade.
Oh. Yeah.
And
they've driven just about everything together.
Yeah. A real testament to Colin, who built that great relationship, of course, which probably, in some ways, you might say, did that stifle his career? I'm not sure.
I was stimulated it, I think.
Yeah. But
just
it was
gave
very,
so many
very
opportunities.
Loyal.
And as a result,
for Cole.
Yeah.
Very loyal driving.
Oh, absolutely.
For Cole.
Yeah. He'd been he was loyal to both of those, to John Bennett. And then, of course, with the George Kurtz, it's continuing even longer. But I think it was all those connections that got him the opportunity to drive that IndyCar last weekend. And he did a really, really good job. I saw him before he started on the Thursday. I saw him, and he's just super relaxed about him. He's just a fine, well, I still think of him as a young man. He's 35 now, remarkably, but he's just got a great head. No, it's not. Not in terms of race drivers. He's coming into his prime.
I'd say that.
But he's just got a great head on his shoulders. We heard in that interview just a few minutes ago, just a really sensible guy, and approached last weekend with absolutely the right attitude. Just there to learn. Just he wanted to do as many laps as he could. He wanted to complete all the laps. He had a slight issue and he lost a lap, but he did did everything else exquisitely and was on the pace of the majority of the field as well. So hats off to Colin Brown for that. And now back onto familiar turf here and be looking to get back in the win column in IMSA.
You mentioned the Aero Motorsport problems this morning. They've been turning laps, representative laps this afternoon with Ryan DL at the wheel. He's out of the car now, so Nick Damon can give us this CrowdStrike pit lane report with him.
Right, it looks like afternoon practice going significantly better than morning practice. What were the problems?
Anything would have been better than this morning, right? So we had a bit of an electrical gremlin. It wasn't letting the throttle position, something way above my pay grade. But that was frustrating because it's one of these things where we tried 90 minutes worth of changes and we got it fixed literally as the checker flag came out. So relieved right now that I actually did fix it and we're trouble-free right now. So far, car seems good. We're just a little bit behind.
So given this is one of the most established racing cars in the world, 120 of them, they've been raced every week all around the world. Was this a brand new problem or a problem that was fat fingers, as we said?
That's a good question. I think we did a Windows update when we rolled out this morning, and I think the car just decided to do a Windows update, and we watched that little tick and circle thing for 90 minutes. But no, it's the good thing about this is they can diagnose them pretty quick. It's just the changes we made took too long to get back out.
Car back out there now in the heat of the day. How is it?
Fairly typical Sebring. We committed this session knowing this would be the worst session of the day, and it's what we get in the race, so it's going to be a hot weekend. It changes so much from morning to afternoon tonight, but typically if you have a pretty good car right now, then we should have a really good car later, and we seem pretty happy.
Obviously one of the most experienced drivers, been on the American circuit for years. I mean, is this a race you look forward to, but as a driver, but perhaps not so much as someone involved in the team for the spare parts you're going to have to replace?
I love it. It's my home track. My wife's from nearby, so I've got the family connection here. But I also live in Orlando, so I think anytime we get to come to Sebring or even Daytona's are special. But obviously a bit of momentum from winning Daytona, and we want to kind of keep that going. But we had a good test a few weeks ago, so missing a little track time, we don't feel super unprepared.
Great stuff, thanks, Rob.
Cheers.
Love listening to Ryan DL. Great interview with Nick Damon in that CrowdStrike pit lane update. Whilst that was going on, we didn't want to interrupt that, but a time of some note coming in for the SC63 Lamborghini of Matteo Caroli. The number 63 going to second position with a 49.4, Jeremy. Just a tenth or so away from Conor De Filippi's BMW Team RLL M Hybrid 25 time of a 1:49.371, which is the benchmark at the moment. That's a huge improvement for that car on its debut in IMSA competition. Spin for the number 18, Erica, at turn six.
Yeah, Conor Zilish. He just improved slightly upon Ryan DL's time in the number 18 car. He's, of course, half an hour or so ago, he was racing in the Mazda MX-5 Cup Series race. I think he ended up second, and he was passed on the last lap. That's a replay of what happened. Just got on the power a little bit too soon, coming off the hairpin. The back end sort of snapped around on him, caught him out there, but didn't hit anything, so able to continue. A spin also there for the one of the Lamborghinis. I think that's car number 60 there, having a quick spin. But that lap by Matteo Caroli, that's pretty impressive. The fastest time for that car this morning, Andrea Caldarelli did 16 laps. Matteo Caroli just did a couple. Romain Grosjean did not get out in the car this morning. But the best lap was a 1:50.9 earlier today for the Lamborghini.
Nope.
And now a 49.4 for Matteo Caroli, second fastest in this session. The previous lap, he got himself up to ninth position in the class at a mid-50. And now a 49.4 for Cairoli, so that bodes well. Right now, then, the order in terms of manufacturers, BMW at the front, that time set by Nick Yeoley a little while ago in car number 25, the BMW. Behind him is Matteo Cairoli in a Lamborghini. Then Fred Makovecki in the Porsche at number 6. Then the two Cadillacs. Scott Dixon has just gone up to fourth position, improved that time to 1:49.918. And then Tom Blomqvist in the Whelan Engineering Cadillac, car number 31. Then the best of the Acuras, which is Ricky Taylor, in sixth position. So five different cars in the top six at the moment, with just under an hour remaining.
Just a very, very scary moment there for the Lexus, the normal coloured Lexus, as it was Leonardo Pulcini who went off at turn 10 in the number 60 Iron Lynx. Again, just a little run-on, but he rejoined just beyond the corner. He went down the runoff in the Iron Lynx Lamborghini number 60. I mean, thank goodness it's a bright colour. But then rejoined just around the corner, which I'm guessing was a blind spot for the number 12 and Aaron Tielitz, who is the fastest car in GTT at the moment. And it was a very close call indeed. I think that might resultant Leonardo Pulcini having a little word from the race control. Neither of the Fords from Ford Multimatic Motorsports, the 64, the 65, have even been on pit lane yet. So Shea Adam gives us this CrowdStrike paddock report rather than pit lane report, Shea. She's out at the garage of the 64 and the 65, out in the paddock. What's going on? Anything?
Not much.
Oh.
That's the bad news. The mechanics are working on both cars very casually, I would even say. They're doing more things like practicing taking wheels off, practicing removing the hood, practicing what happens when a car comes in and maybe the bumper isn't fitting right, and trying to make sure that they can do things quickly when they get out on the track. They've just changed the air intake box on the number 64. They brought one out from behind the wall and put that on the car, but there's almost no work going on to the 64 computer plugged in. It is on the alignment pads, if you will, but they're not actively lining it up, making sure the wheels are all pointing in the same direction.
Is this, do you think, planned, Shea?
Doesn't feel planned. The 65 is back in the garage as well. That one has the front wheels off, the rear wheels are on. That's the one that they're practicing taking the wheels off and putting them back on again. But there's no work at all going on that car, and it is plugged into a computer that's hardwired to their system.
Any sign of a driver or anything like that back there?
No.
But there was nobody in the pit lane, was there?
No. The pit there was a Ford Multimatic driver on the pit box. It was Andy Priya. He's not in this championship. he was just kind of hanging out, taking advantage of an open pit box, perhaps keeping an eye on what Rexy was doing, because Sebi was going to be driving that one.
Might be worth having a quick word with one of the mechanics and just seeing if this is a session they had planned to miss. It's not an irrelevant. There's never an irrelevant session, but sometimes you pick your times. There's still an hour to go in this session, and and therefore it might cool down a little bit later on. There's some clouds bubbling up as well. And Shea, before we leave you there in the paddock, you've got a little Iron Lynx update as well.
Well, the slightly alarming thing is that while I'm down here by the Ford garage, all of a sudden I hear the rumble of a Lamborghini, and it's not coming from straight ahead of me. It's coming from behind me, so it's not on the racetrack. It's coming back into its garage. And the car which came in, it drove in under driver power, so not mechanically assisted. This is the 19, so this is the green Lamborghini. Jordan Pepper beat the car back here, but he was here to greet Frank Pereira when he got out. The two drivers walking very quickly over to their air-conditioned trailer. To be honest, can't blame them with the way temperatures are right now. But they've actually stopped the car outside of their tented garage area. They pulled both front brake discs off, and they've now put new ones on.
Wow.
So a very strange thing to be doing with a lack of urgency as well, it should be said. So, and that's the sound of the 88 AF Course LMP2 car driving past me too. So a lot happening down here in the garage area, even if a lot's not happening, if you see what I mean.
We may have to have a CrowdStrike permanent paddock reporter if it goes on like this. I wonder if it's just they're taking cars back to do planned maintenance so they can have more people work on them and they're not having to do that in an open and hot and sweaty pit lane. I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there. Whilst we were talking this year, Jeremy, a couple of changes, including at the top of the timing.
Yeah, new fastest time there for Scott Dixon in the number 01 Cadillac Racing, Cadillac V-Series R. 149.089 for the Kiwi. Saw him this morning walking down the paddock, calm as you like, as ever. But always enjoys driving these cars at this racetrack here.
He's been on the podium here.
Yeah? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think he wants a win here. Well, he wants a win everywhere, doesn't he? Because that's what he races for. He doesn't race to come third.
Yeah. So the order now, Cadillac, BMW, Lamborghini, Porsche, the top four in GTP.
Do you just want to say that again? Because there might be somebody just tuning in and not realising what you said there. Top four in GTP are as follows, separated by half a second, by the way. And they are what, Jeremy?
Yeah, the Cadillac for Scott Dixon there, 1 minute 49.089. And the BMW, car number 25, is Nick Yellowly that set the time. 1 minute 49.371, about a tenth of a second quicker than Matteo Caroli, jumped up into third place a few minutes ago in the Lamborghini SC63. And he is about a half a tenth better than Fred Makowiecki in the number six Porsche. at a 159.5, and a bit of a gap back to the second of the Cadillacs, the number 31 car. Pipo Durrani is driving that car at the moment. It was Tom Blomqvist that set the time.
Yeah, 149.999. Just gone out.
Just gone out, doesn't
it? Hello, Richard P. says this series tops any other professional series for fan engagement. It's the reason why my kids love coming to the racetrack and are interested in engineering. Hello, Richard. I know you're on site at the moment. Thank you for the kind words about the broadcasting as well. Got some great footage that he's just tweeted from the back of the paddock as the cars were coming out there. At IMSA Radio, if you'd like to get in touch. Hello to Tubbs and everyone at Sacred Coffee who are tuned in as well. Great news that we can always get some Sacred here because of the tie-up with Porsche and Porsche Penske Motorsport. So keeping us powered up through this longest of the days, actually. 13 and a bit hours of track action. SC63 back out on track at the moment in the hands of Romain Grosjean.
For the first time.
For the first time, yeah. Spoke to him this morning with Nick Damon. He got a word with Romain. And Nick Damon, in fact, is about to fire his mic up in the pit lane again. Where have you wombled down to now, Mr.
I have. I have really put the effort in because I'm at the pittiest box, the first box, which is Tower Motorsport, Tower Events, the P2 team, with Charlie Eastwood, new boy on the block for this week. Obviously, big shoes to fill from Scott McLaughlin, who's been in the last two long-distance races. So, Charlie, how come you teamed up with this bunch for Sebring?
Yeah, so, I mean, the plan was to try and do the whole season and then ended up doing it in the Corvette at Daytona, but obviously Scott, yeah, not a bad guy at all to fill the seat, but yeah, it's going well here. I've been here three or four times supporting the event with WEC, and to sort of see the scale of when you start to get into the sort of the big brother of the WEC event is really good. So it's pretty tough out there with the traffic and the amount of cars, and but it's going well so far.
What's the difference between a WEC event at Sebring and an IMSA event at Sebring?
It's hard to draw complete comparisons. Obviously, it's a very different feel being over on this side of the paddock. This is obviously the main paddock, as it were. There's always the sort of temporary paddock over on the WEC side. But I think really when you don't feel so much of a difference now, but when you see the scale of the event on the fan side for the 12-hour, that I think is what's going to stand out massively versus the WEC event. It's always on the Friday before the race where I'm looking forward to sort of... I normally leave the track on the Friday night and I haven't actually experienced the Saturday, but even doing the track walk and you see that the whole track is lined with motorhomes is insane, the support that the race has.
And of course, the races are run quite differently, you know, with the way that yellow flags and caution periods are run. I mean, do you as a driver need to adjust your brain to take advantage of that, or is that all down the wall?
It is, as you said, it's a very different setup. Like, we end up jumping from series to series, so sort of getting back into the regulations. But really, the show that comes with the IMSA side is the bit that everyone seems to love. And, you know, I speak to so many guys that have done IMSA for years, and I'm just looking forward to getting to all of these special races, special tracks, and the racing just seems to be super competitive, especially in the LMP2 this year.
You haven't got in so far. I mean, how many laps have you done around in this car in this series so far?
In an actual race?
In this today?
Today, I've done six or seven laps this morning. So, yeah, not a lot. I'll jump back in here at the end of this session. But we were here testing three or four weeks ago. So we got some good running. I never drove the track in a prototype before, which is an experience in itself. So I'm happy that we got the couple of days under our belt before this race.
Thanks, Charlie. That's Charlie Eastwood out of the Tower Motorsport number LMP2. You talking about Sacred Coffee, John. Charlie was very much cuddling to his bosom a very very pungent espresso. Now I've got coffee envy.
Penske Porsche have Sacred Coffee. I can tell you that there's a bespoke blend for Penske Porsche that Tubbs and the team did, and they are roasting their beans in
Carolina now. They've got a facility there to do their US deliveries. Sacred Sport, if you look up Sacred Coffee or Sacred Sport, you'll find them, and you can order for delivery in the US as well. Hello to Rick McInturf, listening in from the southbound lane of the Jersey Turnpike, presumably sitting in traffic. It always is there. He says, loving the in-car sounds. Hang on. I'll give you just a little bit more. To be fair, it's just... when the cars come past our mics outside. Here we go. And there's a bunch of cars coming through now as well. Just while you sit, don't try to race them while you're in traffic, by the way. How's that? Nice.
That's the cool thing about this series, isn't it? All the different noises of all the engines.
So there was the big thumping V8, that was an LMP2 car, that's what you see there. Then there's a Ferrari gone through. I think that was an Aston Martin. And then you hear the big... the unmistakable Cadillac engine as it, and the pop, pop, pop on the down change as well. Thanks, Rick, at IMSA Radio, if you want to get in touch with us, as Rick just has done. Shay Adam, update from the pit lane.
Going to see if I can dive in here with Parker Thompson. Hey, Parker. It's traditional for Canadians to come to Florida in spring break. This is a little bit warm, though.
It's pretty warm for a Canadian, but our Lexus is feeling good. It's hot out there, but everything's been well so far. We just need to keep at this pace.
I mean, 1.2 seconds over the rest of the field, that is a pretty substantial gap. Is that what you were expecting in these conditions when it's so hot?
No. Generally, we're not great in the heat, but we're prepping for qualifying. I think a lot of other teams are out there just doing their normal race run stuff. So I think it'll be a much different story tomorrow. We're expecting some pretty stiff competition. We'll let the others do their thing and play their games. We're on our strategy that's worked out, and we'll see if we can be there at the end. It's such a long race, as everybody's touched on. You know, one lap pace really doesn't matter at all if you can't be there at the end of 12 hours. So it's a long road ahead. We've got night practice, I think, will show us where we're at. We'll go qualify and see where we're at tomorrow, and then we got 10 hours to wait around until they hand out the trophies at the end of the last two.
So how important is night practice then?
I think I speak for everybody here. Night practice is the most important part. I mean, IMSA WeatherTech competition in every category, you know, these aren't long endurance races anymore. They are long sprint races. And the race ends at the night, right? You saw at Daytona, it ended at the day. So you can pretty much, as a fan, look at whenever the race ends. That's when all the teams are trying to set their car up, because that's when it's going to matter the most.
You guys got fifth last year in your first ever 12-hour Sebring, but you got so much experience racing in Carrera Cup here, learning how it works. How much have you been able to translate from that to the Lexus program now?
Well, unfortunately, the cars are very different.
Yeah.
I happen to like my Lexus a little more. I'm a little biased, I must say, but we've got a big V8 in the front, which completely changes how you drive. So Carrera Cup experience, you get so much racecraft there. I still stay in touch. I still coach in Carrera Cup. So it's cool to stay in touch with the guys down there. There's a lot of hungry guys to get in a position that I'm in here at any team on this pit lane. But the status quo, I had to adapt a lot coming into last year. Last year, I was in the endurance role, which is totally different to the lead role.
Yeah.
I filled that pretty good for the most part. Yeah. I have to say Sebring 12-hour was Sebring and Petite, but I'll highlight Sebring as the craziest race I have ever done. I have never been so close to combat for so many hours in a race car in my life. So Sebring has a special place in my heart. The fans are like no other around here. And then to top that off, the competition is just nuts. You've got, I don't know how many GTs, 30-plus GTs going at it. And then you've got these prototypes trying to thread in between us for 12 hours. It is pretty nuts. So, looking to build off that from last year. I'm a lot more calm coming in this year's 12-hour than I was last year. But I know in the back of my mind it's still going to be just as crazy.
Enjoy every second of it.
Thank you very much, Shay.
Great to hear Parker Thompson in that CrowdStrike pit lane report from Shay Adam. Whilst that was going on, an incident that could have been absolutely massive for Roman Grosjean. It wasn't, but coming through turn 11 to turn 12, just got wide and didn't make turn 13 at all, onto the dirt on the exit of the little right kink at turn 12, went straight on. And I think just clipped the wall with the left front of the Lamborghini SC63.
Oh, yeah.
Bounced back out from tower turn and selected first gear and drove that car away. I suspect it will be coming into the pit, is in the pit lane for a little bit of a look around to that left front, and it might be worth one of our CrowdStrike pit lane reporters going and having a look there.
And I'm not sure that wasn't an outlap.
No, well, unless he
might have been passed
back
once.
In again, yes.
Because Nick, looking at his previous lap time was a 2:37. So.
Yeah. Nick Damon is on Grosjean watch. Spoke to him earlier on. It's the left front, I'm afraid, Nick, so it's the side furthest away from you.
Oh, well, you see, I've hopped into the pit lane. It's amazing, we're both here. Hi, Shane. Have a look around there. Now, they're taking a tyre pressure on it. They're having a good old look and a wobble around of that front left side of the car. Behind it, the 19 Lamborghini, the Huracan, rejoins from its trip to the paddock. So that's been fixed. Quite a lot of looking around. I don't see that there's much damage on the wheel. And the answer to that is not really, no, actually. So there's a very light bit of scuffage, like 2 inches at most on the alloy. I mean, that's probably something you get refurbed for £35 down at Quick Fit, to be honest. So not a major issue. But they are now having an absolute... Oh, hang on, what's that? It's got broken. It's got a little bit of a chippy. But on the whole, it looks 99.9% absolutely fine. It's got a tiny bit of wrap that's gone. Apart from that, all good, and they're just having a very close look now.
Thank you, Nick. Well, I think Roman has got away with one there. That could have been a big off. A lot of people playing fast and loose with the exit curb on turn one, I've noticed. As is typical here, normally we see it more at turn 13. A little furrow starts to be dug behind the back of the curb. That's already somewhere that you could put a crop of potatoes in at turn one. And as we've just had an incident at turn number six as well for the 8-0 Sally Yolick driven Lone Star Racing Mercedes AMG GT3. It's not that bad at turn 13, but at turn one it is. And the latest was the number three Chevy Corvette in that gold colour, which is Alex Sims in that car. And he had a big sideways moment and dropped the right rear Michelin right into that divot, as it were, trench. Now, you know, not great ostensibly, but it pulled the car, pulled straight. Alex did his thing. But coming back on again, you've got to think, Jeremy, with maybe an inch and a half or so behind the curb dug away, you've got to be putting the inside shoulder of any Michelin tyre you drop over the edge there at risk when you bring the car back on.
Yeah, it's it's a problem that's not unique to that corner, but it is something that is just going to get worse as the week goes along and more people run off there on exit and just dig away a bit more of the dirt that is over on the outside of that off that FIA curb.
I've not seen it that bad this early at any corner, and certainly not turn one. As I say, I normally associate that with turn 13 when we're calling the races there earlier on in the week. We see people digging it out and deliberately staying. If you go off, you deliberately stay off until you come back up at the end of the curb so that you don't put the inside of the tyre, the inside sidewall of the tyre under pressure as you come back on. Because those curbs are meant to be run over from the inside out and not rejoined from the outside in. That's how they're designed. Down towards the turn 7 hairpin, Triassi Ferrari just being passed by the number 4 Pratt Miller Mobile 1 Gold Chevy Corvette down there, both Corvettes in special colours. Nicky Katzberg behind the wheel of the number 4 and Alex Sims, who's pitted now in the number 3. Man, this is a big field. I know it's a big field when it takes me 3 scrolls on my mouse to get down from top to bottom. Not quite Nürburgring-esque, but we're getting there. Nearly 60 cars here. 2 races in a row, we've had high 50s, 58 cars and still no sign of those two Ford Multimatic cars. Shea went out to the back there. Looks like they were just taking their time, and she's just told me that the box was still empty. Shea, I take it that the mechanics weren't prepared to talk about what was going on or what wasn't going on.
No, and I can't blame them, because none of them want to be the one who steps up and says something that they shouldn't have. So I'm definitely not holding it against them. Andy Prio was still on their box the last time I walked by, and he gave a nice little smile and a wave. And just an update on this number three Corvette. I have been waiting to talk to Alexander Sims for a very, very long time. Pretty sure he figured that out, and that's why he's been driving this Corvette and basically refusing to get out. Danny Uncadea does have his fire suit on, but Antonio Garcia is in street clothes. So Danny is waiting for an opportunity to go out, but Alexander just having way too much fun not being interviewed by me to get out of the car.
Danny Uncadea, one of a number of drivers and some team personnel who were in Italy at Imola on Sunday and Monday. There's another odd couple of test days. You don't associate doing testing on a weekend and then a weekday, maybe Wednesday or Thursday, or a Thursday and a Friday. They were testing for the FIA World Endurance Championship next round, and some ELMS teams there as well, ostensibly testing the LMP2 back into a higher power configuration for the ELMS this season, which turned up some very interesting times. As we were saying this morning, Uncadea is saying, I want to be back in a P2. They were super quick, quicker than the prototypes. Oh, very close call at the exit of turn one a moment or two ago as Ben Hanley rejoined. And I think it was the Brendan Arrib driven Inception Racing. So Hanley, Ben Hanley coming out. I know it wasn't Ben Hanley, my apologies. It's the 99 prototype, another purple prototype. So that will make it Matt Brabham for AO Racing coming out of the pits, doing exactly what he's meant to do, and staying to the right of the blend line. But you still join in at the exit of turn one. And that McLaren was already there and drifting across. That was a very close call indeed for Spike, the Dragon. All's fair in love and war, and no harm, no foul, and many other cliches. They both continued.
Good, that's a good year. A few improvements lately. Nothing earth-shattering, but Ricky Taylor just improved in the number 10 Wayne Taylor Racing with Andretti Acura. Remains in the fifth position, 149.839 then for Ricky. Also some improvements in LMP2. Josh Burden in the Riley Motorsports car number 74 jumped up to third position in that class, 152.4. Also improvements in the last couple of laps for Lawrence Herr in the number 20 car for MDK Bar High Class Racing, who's now in sixth position. And ahead of him goes Hunter McElroy in the number 11 car for TDS. So now we've got the top five cars in LMP2 covered by just under 3/10 of a second. In GTD, it's still the same two cars have been top for the majority of this session. All of the sessions. Time set early on. Fastest of all of them is the non-pro Lexus car number 12. It was Parker Thompson who set that time, 2 minutes 0.237. Then five GTD Pro cars in a row. The second of the Lexuses, Jack Hawksworth, did a 2 minutes 0.304. Next up is James Collado in a recent competition in Ferrari, number 62. Then James Hinchcliffe in the McLaren for Pfaff Motorsports. And then Nicky Katzberg in the Corvette, car number 4. And Brian Sellers next up in the Paul Miller Racing BMW. It had the problems this morning. And all of those five cars covered by about 8/10 of a second. So good to see the Paul Miller Racing BMW, having had the problems this morning, now running, turning plenty of laps this afternoon.
It's all busy in the pit lane. It's interesting. Half an hour or so to go, we've had a huge number of pit callers. In front of me, I have the number 4 Cadillac Corvette, resplendent in its gold colour, which, by the way, is exactly the same gold colour as the Jordans had in 1996, that kind of strange off-gold, which was advertising a certain cigarette brand at the time. Anyway, it's now Mobil 1, 50th anniversary gold, and they're going through a rear damper change. They've managed to get the dampers off, I think, both sides now, and they're putting them back on again. There's a lot of setup changes going on. Now, whether these are changes that are just seeing how we can adjust the car to be where we think it needs to be during the cooler weather when it's still hot, not so sure. There was certainly a big ride height adjustment on the 25 BMW. Quite interesting thing on 25 BMW, obviously to do that ride height, they had to take the rear deck off. Now, I noticed something which may have been absolutely standard, I'm just not seeing it in the 15 years of being in the pit lane. But when you take off those rear decks, you tend to use two big T-bars, two big T-wrenches. Just noticed they're different lengths, which means that they don't interfere with each other. If you've got two mechanics, one each one, they're at different heights, so they can undo them both at the same time. It's just a small point. Probably everyone does it. I've been walking and not seen it, but I thought that's quite good thinking. And as we always think of ways of improving cars at all times. I understand also we've lost the 49 car. That's gone behind the wall. But yeah, it does appear there's a lot of people now working on the cars, both in front of the wall and some of them in the paddock.
Not seeing this much work going on at this stage of the week for quite some time, to be honest, and it's not as if these are teams who don't know what they're doing. So suggestion is that they're trying to wring the absolute last millisecond of performance out of all the cars. Of course they are. There isn't a 49, and in fairness I told Nick that because that was what was on the screen. I'll just check back to make sure that I read that right.
A couple of new fastest times, though. First of all, overall, Pipo Durrani goes to the top of the charts in the number 31 Wheel and Engineering Cadillac, a 148.483. He did a 48.7 last time around, and now he's just done a 48.483. So he's now got 0.6 of a second in hand over the other Cadillac, the Cadillac Racing entry, run by Chip Ganassi's team at 01. In second place now, and also in LMP2 a new fastest time as well. Josh Burden, who went up to third a few minutes ago, has now gone to the top for Riley Motorsports at a 152.078.
Yeah, just check back, it was the 49 that was listed on the race control channel message channel, so I'm not sure. I'll go and have a quick look and see. 47 maybe, the Cetelar car. No, that's out on the track. 45, Carl Marcelli, Lamborghini Huracan. Well, that is in the pit lane, or shown in the pit lane at the moment. So maybe Shea or Nick can have a look down there. It's the other one I think it could have been. Because I can definitely see the Cetelar going around. So maybe that was just a timing error. And was therefore, what did I say there? The
45
car, yeah. Yeah, that has gone behind the wall. Kyle Marcelli last in that car, so that must be the car that was listed on the channel. It's just one of those things, you see it for a moment on the bottom of the timing screen, and somebody has to type that on to a message. So we're down to the last 25 minutes of this session. We go into possibly the most important one of the weekend, other than racing and qualifying tonight. That's the setup time for the last couple of hours or so of the race. But this is still very interesting. And looking at the top of the field, Jeremy, there's gaps there that are bigger than I expected to see.
Well, I think now we're seeing some people doing some qualifying sims at this stage, certainly for people that are only there, I would suggest. Normally, the second free practice session on an IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship weekend is the split session, where we have the 15 minutes at the front of the session, the beginning of the session, just for the non-pro drivers, either in LMP2 or in GTD. And then the final 15 minutes are just the pro drivers, so GTP and GTD Pro. So that's when we see the quick lap times being set down when there's a lot fewer cars out on the racetrack. But they don't have that luxury here this weekend. So you're going to have to do, if you are going to do a qualifying sim, then you've got to do it with the track open to everybody. And that was a big jump forward there for people at Arani, certainly to have that margin that we haven't seen from any other cars so far this week, today.
CrowdStrike Pit Lane Report. It's a little bit extra special this time because I'm here with Oliver Jarvis. And Ollie, you won this race in an Audi in the great prototype days. Now you're driving it in a GT car. How different is Sebring with the different downforce levels?
Yeah, it's like a, I wouldn't say a different track because actually the racing lines are almost identical, but you know, it's a very different feeling. You miss a bit of downforce in the high speed. I have to say the low speed's probably better in the GT car. It rides the bumps better. Tire warm-up's definitely a bit easier than them prototypes. But yeah, completely different beast to a prototype.
What would it mean to you to get a win in a GT class car here because your two previous wins were both in prototype?
Yeah, that would be huge. You know, I won Daytona in two classes. I won here in the Audi. I led here in the Mazda till 20 minutes to go till we had a puncture. So to add to that and to do it with Pfaff and in the McLaren GT, I mean, that would be really, really special.
You guys were just testing the limits of the fuel tank earlier, right?
Potentially.
Bringing James on board is something that's very familiar to Pfaff, but he's only ever run at Daytona. So what's it like trying to tell him about the Mobil 1 12 Hours of Sebring?
Well, he's done more laps around specific corners here than any of us, but not the whole track. No, it's great to have James. Like, we know each other very well from a previous life in A1GP. So we get on. We were teammates. I drove for Team GB. He was Team Canada, but we worked together. It was under one roof. So we have a fantastic relationship. It's great having his experience, and he's also super quick and great to work with. So, you know, don't tell him, but, it's great to have him on board.
It's a good thing he can't hear you since he's in the car. Ollie, thank you for talking to us.
No worries. Thank you very much.
Yeah, potentially testing the fuel tank. Very good. Thank you to Ollie Jarvis for that. Jack Aitken aboard the wheel in Cadillac. This is the quickest car on the circuit. He's running around at the moment. Sebastian Bourdais and Conor De Filippi. Conor's not out, actually, but Sebastian Bourdais has just gone out. That might be a quali sim there as well.
Conor just improved on his last lap.
Yeah.
Moved up. We're running in third position now. A 149.340 for that BMW M Hybrid V8. And Philippe Nasser also improved just a lap or so ago in the number 7 Penske Porsche 963. A 149.407. Still no, better part of a second, almost a second down, though, on that time set by Pipo Durrani just a few minutes ago.
IMSA Radio, at IMSA Radio on the socials, if you want to get in touch. 100.9 FM around the circuit at Sebring International Raceway today and tomorrow. We'll be joined on Saturday as we take over the Central Highlands Voice of Sports, Highlands ESPN 1063 AM, and also Sirius XM 206. On Saturday for the main race, and every session on RS2 around the world, we'll add in a bit of video to that as well, including the qualifying for IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship tomorrow. Whether you're here in the US or further afield, you can watch that tomorrow. And of course, we've got some racing here today as well with Porsche and Lamborghini and their first two races of the weekend, along with the wheel and Mazda. At Championship, they'll have their second races in what is a Fast and Furious Friday tomorrow. It's Thursday Thunder going through to the darkness tonight. Sunset at 7:35, so we'll have a decent bit of darkness running this evening. Actually, that's on Saturday, so it'll be a little bit before that, but still a decent bit of darkness running for the teams to get themselves set up, get their headlamps set up, but more importantly, to get their setup set up for the Saturday night, if that makes any sense at all. You have to have a car that comes alive when the sun goes down. Now, Porsche keys the race on Saturday. I will guarantee you will say, do your best work in the dark. Be there when it gets dark and do your best work when it gets dark. That's you, the Michelin tyre, and the car. All of you have got to do that. You see improvements for the last couple of minutes' time.
doesn't mean people have stopped trying. They're running through their run plans. Rather more cars gone behind the wall than we like to see at this time of the day. Still not seen either of the two Fords. I've got to think that they decided not to do this session. Don't ask me why they would do that, but I can't believe that neither of those cars are there, that they've got that problem with so little urgency going on, as reported by Shea. We'll have a talk about that with Jeremy Shaw in a moment, but let's head back to our CrowdStrike pit lane reporters. This time it's Nick Damon with Mikkel Jensen.
Out of the 11 TDS P2, Mikkel, give us an idea of how it's going for the TDS team so far on these two sessions.
Yeah, it's very hard with the traffic. More than 60 cars out there for such a small track. It's very narrow in the in section, so you lose a lot of time in traffic. When you do a 10-lap run, you might not even get one clear lap, which makes it super hard. T1 and T17, you need a lot of commitment on this track, and you never really get free corners. So before going into the race, you might have had two or three times completely free running through those corners. So preparation is super hard. But it's also what makes this race so special.
I mean, yes, you're not getting the clear laps. What you are getting, of course, is the experience of where you can get past each different type of car, both class type and, of course, chassis type.
Yeah, traffic is everything here. So having the traffic in practice is obviously where you need to learn the most. Everyone can do good clear laps. Not everyone can do the best job in traffic. So that's where you need to make the difference over the 12 hours, both to stay out of trouble, but also to make the difference towards the end on the pace.
Of course, your teammate Stephen will be doing the qualifying. That's the rule within P2. Has he had any clear laps, or does he have to kind of like? Do you have to tell him, Steve Thomas, how to go fast?
Yeah, he wasn't really happy before. He didn't get a clear lap for his qualifying practice now, and tonight is dark, so that was actually his last chance before tomorrow. So we're not super satisfied, but yeah, I hope he can do the job tomorrow, and then we start hopefully far up on the grid.
Great, there we go.
Thank you.
It's a fair point as well. Mikkel Jensen, slightly frustrating that they haven't had the time for the bronze drivers out there, the non-pro drivers, to do their quali sim, but it's the same for everybody. Therefore, you've got to go out there tomorrow when there will be fewer cars out on track.
Yes.
And basically make hay at that point, whether it's sunny or slightly overcast. I don't think it'll be raining, but whoever adapts to that quickest and can switch on their Michelin tyres and themselves and the car is going to profit by that tomorrow.
Yeah, there won't be any, or there shouldn't be any complaints tomorrow from the LMP two cars there for that single qualifying session, just 15 minutes. It'll be just the LMP three cars out there on their own, so 13 cars on a 3.74 mile racetrack. That shouldn't be a problem in terms of running into anybody, getting other cars in your way, assuming you pay attention to when the car goes out relative to your competition. And that should be a very, very exciting session. I think tomorrow in the qualifying, it's going to be really interesting, actually, all the way around. We're going to have all the GTD cars together. You talked about, John, a while ago. I mean, there's 58 cars here this day. It's five cars more than we had 1 year ago, and it's super busy. I mean, there'll be a total of 34 GT cars out there for that qualifying tomorrow, because the GTD Pro and the GTD are not split for qualifying, so we both of those classes out together for 15 minutes. Then we'll have to 15 minutes for LMP2 and then stand back, because the GTP cars, we're going to see them going, I think, a lot faster tomorrow than we have seen thus far.
Mathieu Jaminet getting a set of sticker Michelins for Porsche Penske Motorsport in his number 6963. So he's going to try and find some kind of window in the traffic. You can hear from our effects mics that he's a constant stream of cars around pretty much the whole circuit. There's just no respite out there. At the moment, the biggest gap that I can see on the track is for the number 74, Orica. He's got about three corners ahead of him.
As he comes through 15 now, it's half the length, call it three quarters of the length of the Ullman straight that he's got the gap to the Ferrari number 34, Triassi, one of the Triassi cars. Let's go to Nick Damon. Colton Hurt, it was quick earlier on. He's with Nick now for this CrowdStrike pit lane report.
Colton, back at Sebring with the Acura, and an Acura that's looking a lot happier and healthier than it perhaps was at Daytona in comparison to the other cars.
Hey, take weight off and that happens, right? But it's great to be back here in this paddock. I love doing this sort of stuff, and it's a fun little weekend for me to do something that's very different to my normal job and drive a car that's very fun to drive. This Acura is awesome. To work with this Wayne Taylor group is, I feel honored. It's a really professional group, and a group that gives us a great car to hopefully win this thing. But, you know, I think we just got done doing some longer runs, race pace stuff, and the car felt good. I was happy inside the car. It's a pretty big adjustment to jump from the Indy car to this car in quite a few different ways, but they're both very rewarding to drive, both very powerful, fun race cars.
Yeah, you say you had a very busy week at St. Petersburg last week, opening the IndyCar season. How do you feel that went? Were you happy with the performance there?
You know, obviously you want to win, but to start off with the top five, it's a nice way to start the year for us with Andretti Autosport with the IndyCars. But you know, it's so much fun to be able to try all these different disciplines. You know, racing in Sebring or St. Pete last week in an IndyCar, and then coming here to Sebring, very different racetracks and two very different race cars. So I'm very happy to be able to do this.
And of course, you've got, yeah, you go to St. Petersburg, you go to Sebring, then you go to a $1 million prize race at Thermal next week. I mean, how do you approach that? Is it all about the money? Is it the same as a normal race? It's no points? Is it just crazy? What's your mental process for that one?
Win it or bin it, I think. You know, I don't think anybody really cares about coming in second there, and nobody cares about not tearing up race cars because there's no point. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. I hope people watch it and enjoy it. It's definitely not going to be your normal IndyCar race, and it'll be interesting for sure.
Have you ever done a cash race before? In any of your previous ovals or when you were younger? You know, go for the, it might have been $25, but yeah.
I mean, there are a few races in karting that I ran that would give some money. Obviously, it's not to that level. It was, you know, maybe $1,000 to win. When you're 8 years old, even though I don't get to keep the money, it feels awesome to win something like that. But, it's cool to have the shot at trying to win that amount of money. And that setting, it's going to be... It's going to be interesting. I don't know what's going to happen or who's going to be fast. I think it's going to be pretty obsolete on who you see that's faster, but it's a cool idea.
Thank you, and enjoy this weekend.
Thanks.
Well, I've just gotten a little bit of interesting intel from a few different teams. It seems that some of the abbreviated running that we're seeing now and saw this morning and will not see for night practice, because that's really when people want to be out, is tire-based. The allotment for the GT3 cars for this entire race meeting is 15 sets of tires. It's a 12-hour race. If you do a pit stop every hour and you want new tires every time, and assuming you're going to put new tires on for qualifying, which, why would you not do that, that's going to be 12 sets total between qualifying and the race. That leaves three sets for three practices, and it's the heat of a day. So perhaps that is what's going on with Ford Multimatic. And the reason that they're not out here, it could be as simple as they're just saving sets of tires while everyone else is burning them.
Yes, to a certain extent. I, as I said a little while ago, Jeremy, when we were discussing this, I just don't see that there's... If they're not rushing around trying to fix something, it suggests to me that there's not a burning issue with those two Fords, and we've not seen anything from the team that would suggest that they are fighting a major and at the moment insurmountable problem, that they're having to fly in a new engine, a new gearbox, whatever, for both of those cars. So and Shea didn't report that anything was in pieces, as it were, so I could only suspect that they've decided not to do this hour and a half. And maybe we have a chat with them tonight once they're back on the track and they're feeling a little bit more relaxed. And we'll have a chat with them and find that out. I suspect
Very
until then
point.
We won't know.
Very good point by Shay Adam there. Thank you, Shay. A couple of improvements here. Second fastest car. That'll be Nick Yellerly in number 25 BMW M Hybrid V8. 149.083 for Nick. So that's exactly 0.6 of a second behind the Whelen Cadillac. Pipa Durrani's time, 148.483. And just fractionally quicker by 0.006 than Scott Dixon, who was in the number 001 Cadillac a little while ago. Also a new second fastest time in LMP2, coincidentally. This time it's Toby Sowery.
Oh, wow.
In a crowd strike by APR number 04. He turns a 52.214. The Englishman, who thoroughly enjoyed himself at Daytona for his first race in the WeatherTech Sports Car Championship.
He is, as they say, a quick study over here. He learns fast.
Yeah, he did the same in Indy Lights when he first came over here for Lights too. So, really good young driver. Great to see him get this opportunity. He's a good young guy from the Cambridge area in the UK, and he's excited to be back here for the entirety of the Michelin Endurance Cup this season. Just going to get a lot of experience.
Inside the last 8 minutes of this session.
And a new P2 overall. Nobody's yet challenging Pipa Durrani's time, but Louis Delatraz in the number 40 WTR Wayne Taylor Racing with Andretti Acura up to second position. 148.720, so just 0.237 behind the number 31 Cadillac.
Interesting, so I've just been reading a story while Shea was doing her update there on Sportscar 365, where Louis Delatraz has been telling John De Geest and the team that the Acura ARX06 is, and I quote, in a better window this weekend. They felt it was somewhat bogged down with additional weight at the Rolex, and they have lost what, about 17 kilos? That's
yes,
quite a lot of weight. That,
yeah, it is. Yeah, it's you know, better part of 40 pounds. So yeah, no, a not insignificant amount for sure. The you know, some various changes to the BOP compared to last week, more significant is what they were from last year. But the Cadillac is 30 kilos heavier than it was at Daytona for this weekend. But it didn't seem to, you know, that car's still working well, clearly. As Mathieu Jaminet goes up to third position now in number 6 Porsche.
He did have a set of sticker tyres on not so very long ago,
I'm
so
sure
he's used them to the fullest. And Shay Adam can give us a little more information.
I've just seen something that made me very, 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 very happy, as you can probably hear in my voice. In doing the homework for this race, I noticed that Scott Dixon has 30 starts in the NCAA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. A lot of wins, a lot of podiums, zero pole positions. Well, Cadillac Chip Ganassi Racing just did a timed fuel load, sticker tires, and Scott Dixon behind the wheel. So are we going to see Dixie finally attempt to qualify and maybe get a pole in this championship tomorrow?
Wow, that's very interesting. Very interesting indeed. Thank you for that, Shay. Let's keep an eye on that car going back out and see if Scott can do what he needs to do. Got a car off at turn 4-5, and it is the Pfaff McLaren.
My scoring system here shows Sebastian Bourdais just getting
in that
out of
car.
The pits,
yeah, I've got that as well. I'm just going to wait to see if that clears. Now, who was that in the Pfaff McLaren, which is
the new fastest time
into the pit lane?
Look
after
who
that
it is! Phil Hansen has gone to the top for JDC Miller Motorsports in its number 85 Porsche, the privateer Porsche, yes. A 148.149 for the Englishman. That is stout. Good for him.
It was James Hinchcliffe that put the Pfaff Motorsports McLaren GT3 Evo off and has come straight back into the pits. Oops. 5 minutes to go. Had a chat with Phil on the flight back from Qatar, I think, and just sort of getting on and getting off, and he hadn't been a happy bunny at Qatar, and not sure he was overly looking forward to coming here. He was expecting a similar tough go
in that privateer JDC Miller Motorsports Porsche 963.
Yeah, zero help from the factory pretty much on those privateer cars, but that's a great effort. That's the fastest lap of the day so far, on 48.149 for Phil Hansen, about a tenth of a second quicker, a bit more than a tenth of a second quicker than the best time from the earlier session, John.
John Church saying it about that car, however, that the 963, he felt was one of, if not the best sports car he'd ever been involved with, and was really enjoying getting to grips with it. But as you see, some of the support, which is legendary really from Porsche Motorsport,
so bizarre,
particularly for Proton. Christian Reid knows them an awful lot, and Christian hasn't wanted to talk to anybody. I mean, he's not very verbose anyway, but he just doesn't want to answer any questions at all about the program at the moment. And as I say, it's not as if he's a chatterbox, but nevertheless, normally if you ask him a straight question, he will give you some kind of answer, and very little information forthcoming from those private teams. Not from talking to Hertz team Jota, that they're ploughing their own furrow and they're just doing their own thing, and doing rather well with what they're doing. So they feel they've got a handle on the car, but they have been running the car in competition longer than anybody else. Remember when Christian Reid got his car last year, he decided to test rather than go and compete. Hugely committed through turn number one for, well, it's still listed as Sebastian Bourdais. The car was skipping sideways on those new Pirellis and scraping the ground as well, of new Pirellis, of the new Michelin's tyres through turn one. And that was absolutely throw the car at the corner and deal with it on the exit. Down at turn six now. We'll watch the rest of that lap as we get an update from the pit lane. Here's Nick Damon.
Well, yeah, we've taken 2 seconds. We have to speak to Ben Keating. Ben, but you take it easy this time, just one car, one program.
Yeah, I love doing two cars at Daytona, but that's really the only race that you can do two cars in. I mean, theoretically you could do it, but I don't think anybody's crazy enough, you know, to do two cars in the same race. With the WEC race, for the last couple years I've been doing both the WEC race on Friday and the IMSA race on Saturday. That was hard enough. I can't imagine doing two 12-hour races.
Yeah, I mean, I think versatility is your key always racing. How is this program? How is the number two Orica going?
It's been going great. Yeah, I've been really delighted with just the way the team goes about things. You know, they really know what they're doing, and it's a very professionally run team. And you know, it's been very good. Yeah, we've always come to the track with the car that's been in the window. So, as a driver, I feel like that's all you can ask for.
And have you had a chance to do some quality laps?
I was supposed to. I was going to try to do some quality laps there, but then we had the red flag at the beginning, and that was like the peak of the tire. And then when I came back around, a bunch of the other cars were still coming out of pit lane for the first time, so I never got any clean laps. So,
thanks, Ben.
So, thank you to Nick and to Shay, our CrowdStrike pit lane team. Checkered flag is out. Just as I was getting, I was about to say it's about to come out. It is out. And
just before that, Sebastian Bourdais, you spotted him going on to a quick lap. He turned the second fastest time of the session. In the 01 Cadillac, Sebastian Bourdais, 148.385, so a couple of tenths down on Phil Hansen's best, but good enough to put his Ganassi-run Cadillac Racing entry ahead of Pipo Derani by less than a tenth of a second.
So Phil Hansen then holds on to it for JDC Miller. Porsche from Cadillac. That's the 01 from the 31. Then Delatraz for the best of the Acuras in the 40 car. Then the first of the Porsche Penske Motorsport machines was Mathieu Jaminet in fifth, and sixth Nick Yellerly in LMP2.
Riley, number 74, on top of the pile by just on a tenth of a second from CrowdStrike. Tom Dillman for Inter-Europol in third position had exactly the same time as the CrowdStrike car, but the CrowdStrike car did it earlier, so gets the position. Then 0.011 of a second further back, Luis Perez Compank for Richard Mille, EF Corsa. The top six made up by United Autosports, number two, the Wins car, and Dragon Speed with Malthy Jackson. Top 12 in LMP2, separated by less than a second. And then in the GT categories, it was Frankie Montecaldovo for Vasser Sullivan, or at least it was Parker Thompson who put the time in the number 12. The GTD car ahead of all the GTD pros, but it was again the Lexus dominating that GTD category in both Pro and Am, with Risi Competition, Pfaff Motorsport, Corvette Racing and AO Racing the top five in GTD Pro. And in GTD Forte Racing's Lamborghini from the court of Preston Motorsport, Mercedes AMG from the Wright Motorsport, Porsche and Conquest Racing's Ferrari in the top five for GTD. That's how it stands at the end of this session. Night qualifying to come, and we'll go racing with Porsche Carrera Cup North America next, live from Sebring.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, check imsaradio.com and subscribe to IMSA Radio wherever you get your podcasts.